ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिबोधिदां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन ग्रथिदां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीं अम्ब त्वाम् अनुसन्दधामि भगवद्गीते भवद्वेषिणीम्। यं ब्रह्मा वरुणेन्द्ररुद्रमरुदस्तुन्यन्ति दिव्यैस्तवैः वेदैः साङ्गपदक्रमोपनिषदैः गायन्ति इयं सामगाः ध्यानावस्थिततद्गतेन मनसा पश्यन्ति इयं योगिनो यस्यान्तं न विदुःसुरासुरगणाः देवाय तस्मै नमः। So we have been discussing the 13th verse of the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Now we are going to take up the 14th verse. In the 13th verse, Lord Krishna says, Dehinosmin yatha dehi kaumaram yavanam jara tatha dehantara praptihi dhiras tatrana muhyadi. So there are two different approaches towards life as a whole. One, you can look upon your life as this physical embodiment. It's just like interpreting an iceberg on the tiny fraction that is seen above the water level. The iceberg may be 100 feet deep, 90 feet may be below the water level, but we can see only 10 feet above the water. So we think the iceberg is only 10 feet tall. Like that, when we interpret our life, define our life just as one chance, born somewhere and then going through asmin dehe in this body, kaumaram jevanam jara, boyhood, youth, middle age, old age, sickness and death. If this is how we look upon this life, we can never have peace of mind. And not only that, it's just like if somebody is competing for Olympics and if you tell him you have to jump once, if you don't get the highest, then you'll be disqualified. Normally, you undergo training for several years, then only you will make an attempt to enter the Olympic competition. But so, Lord Krishna says, we are part of this continuing succession, like a rotating wheel. We are being living in the past. We have several life cycles. This is one life cycle and we will have many other life cycles. I already quoted the 6th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, where Lord Krishna makes a very radical statement. As the essence of the statement is, you are never lost and you are never late. Nothing is lost. So this is in response to a very, very simple question put by the teacher. Suppose you pray and meditate and read scriptures, do spiritual practices for a long time, and then many unfortunate people may have a deviation. They may not succeed in one life. Does it mean that all your efforts are gone in vain? It gone waste? Lord Krishna says no. If you have meditated once in your life, if you have thought one good holy thought in your life, if you have helped one person, and if you have led, let's say, just a few years of unselfish life, that will create a spiritual bank balance in your name. And when you are born again, this spiritual bank balance, the result of all the good actions, not maybe there are not too many, but some good actions everyone does, that will help you to continue your spiritual journey forward. So this already we discussed, you know, ayadi siddhayo pedo yoga chalida manasaha aprapyoga samsiddhim kamkatim krishna gacchati. He say, a student is asking a teacher, suppose I do my best instead of trying to make money all my lifetime, I spend a lot of my time meditation, prayer, doing good actions, thinking good thoughts. It's a waste of effort and time and life. Lord Krishna says, no, you don't waste anything. So, because you'll be born again with this spiritual bank balance with you and you continue your spiritual journey. Now, in the 14th verse, a very important point is discussed. How to keep your mind as your friend? Now, mind has one special characteristic. If mind is not your friend, then it will be your worst enemy. You do not have a neutral, it doesn't take a neutral position, you know. So the 14th verse is Matra Sparshastu Kaundeya Sidoshra Sukhadukhadaha Agama Apayino Anityaha Tam Tidiksha Subharada. The simple meaning of the statement is, when the senses come in contact with sense objects, let's say my eyes come in contact with different visual objects, when my mind and eyes come together and focus on an object, then I see that object. When my eyes and my senses of hearing come together, I hear voices, noises. When my eyes and my sense of smell, sense of touch, sense of taste, they all come together, the different sense experiences are experienced by the mind. Now, these experiences are not always very happy experiences. There can be very painful experiences also. So the verse tells you, we experience heat and cold, sita ushna. Similarly, we may feel pain and pleasure. If we go on looking for happiness, you have to pay a heavy price, because when you feel absence of happiness, you'll be depressed. If you do not always look for happiness, then absence of happy experience will not be a terrible blow to our mind. So Lord Krishna, the teacher, gives a very profound message. When our senses, mind and sense objects come together, we experience different experiences, both good and bad, painful and pleasant experiences, and heat and cold. Then he says, agama apayinaka. It comes and it goes. I mean, these are of a fleeting nature, and you should be able to practice titiksha. Titiksha means the ability to experience, to go through different experiences without being shocked or without being elated. If you get too much elated, too happy when something good happens, then you have to be careful. You should ask your mind, don't go too far. A mind which suddenly gets elated is heading for a disaster. Because when that happy experience changes, and which is inevitable, we cannot have a continuous succession of happy experiences in the world. The richest man in the world, the healthiest man in the world, cannot have it. If body is strong, mind is sick. If mind is fine, body may not be so very. I used to mention the example of, you know, the Stephen Hawking's. He didn't have much to write home about his body, you know. But I don't think he was ever depressed. He could connect himself to something beyond the body, something that transcends the body. So here the message is, tan titikshasva means you practice titiksha. Titiksha is a very important quality, not only for spiritual seekers, but even if you want to experience spiritual common sense, you know, you need titiksha. Titiksha is sahanam sarva dukhanam aprigar purvagam chinda vilaprahidam sa titiksha nigadhyade. This is a definition of titiksha by the greatest Vedanta philosopher, Shankaracharya, in 8th, who lived in 8th century. He says, it doesn't mean that you become insensitive. It doesn't mean that you deaden your mind. Your sensitivity gets atrophied. When an experience that is normally a happy experience comes, don't get too elated. You can be happy, but don't be too happy. The moment you exceed the happiness range beyond the limit, then you may expect the same happiness all the time, which is certainly unlikely. So then, absence of happiness is always pain. So, the ability to keep the mind at a state of equilibrium, which is the essence of what we call common sense, or wisdom, spiritual wisdom or common sense. This is what you have to practice. If you do not practice, mind is going to be your worst enemy. That's an important thing. That means when the senses dictate the mind, when senses lead the mind, when senses are the masters and mind is the slave, when mind is enslaved by the senses, then mind is enslaved by every fleeting experience of pain and pressure, then that mind is going to be worst enemy. On the other hand, when mind dictates terms to the senses, when senses are under control of the mind, that mind is your best friend. So this idea is given in a beautiful imagery in one of the ancient Vedantic textbook, Kathopanishad. Their life is depicted as a journey on a chariot. Now, when you are driving a chariot in ancient times, you should have your horses under perfect discipline. You should have a sensible driver to run the chariot. He should not be drunk. And the reins with which the driver controls the horses should be strong in his hands. And for that he should be sensible. And then the horses also will be under perfect discipline. And then you will reach the destination. Atmanam Vridhinam Vidhi Shariram Vridhamevacha Buddhindu Saradhim Vidhi Manapragrahamevacha Indriyani Paranyahu Vishyan Steshu Gocharan Atmendriya Mano Yuktam Bhokti Tyahu Manishinaka. You should excuse me, some of you at least, because without the Sanskrit, the ancient verses, the ideas will not come to me. Ideas come later. First the ancient teachers come and then ideas come. So this is a wonderful imagery in the Kathopanishad. It's very interesting. Life is compared to a journey on a chariot. Well, you can even compare it to a journey on a car in modern times. So in the old imagery, you are the one who is traveling. And you have a driver. Of course, in ancient times, and even now in India, people will have their drivers. So they have to learn from Americans how to buy their car and drive their own car. So, you know, you are the traveler. You should have a driver. And the driver should be able to hold the steering wheel perfectly, steadily in his hands. Then the car will move. So in ancient Vedic text, the traveler is yourself. The driver is your intelligence or intellect. And the reins with which the driver controls the horses is the mind. And the horses are the senses, or eyes, ears, the sense of smell, the sense of taste, the sense of touch. All these are five senses of perception. So, Indriyani Paranyahu, these are the horses. If the horses are not properly controlled by a steady driver, with a steady mind, with a steady reins, if the reins is broken, then also you won't be able to control the horses. If the horses take control of the journey, then instead of reaching your destination, you may reach somewhere else, if not the ICU. Therefore, Lord Krishna says, mind should control the senses. Senses should not control the mind. If the senses control the mind, mind is the tormentor. Mind becomes a dictator. Mind becomes your enemy. Mind becomes your worst, your most hostile enemy. But how to do that? There is a very interesting psychological principle put forward. All these experiences, pain and pleasure, happiness and unhappiness, cold and heat, they are there, but remember, they are not permanent. They don't remain the same all the time. Happiness and unhappiness come and go. Cold and heat come and go. Good and bad experiences come and go. When we remember that they are not permanent, when we remember their momentary nature, their impermanent nature, then you develop a unique spiritual wisdom. This spiritual wisdom naturally comes to you without going through any management school, really speaking. Management school actually destroys this natural inherent human faculty of this higher wisdom. So, Lord Krishna says, the only way to acquire this unique spiritual wisdom is to keep in our mind all the time what we are actually know, that these things come and go. When a disaster strikes, well, after some time it'll be happy experience. That's okay. But when a happy experience comes, we should also remember this happiness will not last all the time. So, to be able to look upon both with a sense of equanimity, even-mindedness, it is what is called titiksha. So the titiksha, or the ability to look beyond and look beneath all these fleeting experiences of mind, sensory world, is spiritual wisdom. This is the only way to keep our mind in a state of steadiness. When senses bring happy experiences, mind should not get too much elated. Such a mind will also be able to bear the brunt of, the burden of unhappy experience. This is something we already know. See, when you buy tickets, go to Disneyland, 3 hours, you experience something. Well, after coming back, you don't complain that it doesn't continue. When you come out of it, you can't expect it. You may have some experiences in the dream. When we come out of the dream, we do not expect those dream experiences to continue. So, this state is called Samatvam Yoga Uchyate. Yoga doesn't actually mean standing on your head. Yoga is actually the science of helping you to stand on your feet, in the spiritual sense of the term. So, the other yoga may be helpful, but the yoga philosophy tells us how to stand on our feet firmly without any deviation, without any shaking. So that's why he says, this is matras pashastu kaundeya sitoshna sukadukkhadaha agama apayino anityaha tam tidikshasu bharata. So Lord Krishna is actually drawing our attention to a natural stupidity of taking the impermanent or the momentary as the permanent and as eternal. We may know intellectually. Every educated man knows this world is changing all the time. Every elementary student of physics knows the world is changing all the time. But then when we lose money, when we lose our job for some time, which may not be a permanent situation, we may get a job again, still at that moment, we forget what we intellectually know very well. We may get a job again, but that is forgotten. And we get too much obsessed with the unpleasant situation. That is the cause of depression according to Bhagavad Gita. So the only medicine for this depression is this contentment. Contentment is not something that you learn by repeating, I'm happy, I'm successful, which you do normally paying huge amount in management courses, you know. That kind of thing doesn't really work. It should be supported by a profound, realistic philosophy. Contentment. What's the contentment? What is meant by contentment? So the Sanskrit word is contentment is santosha. That is, again, the ability to look beyond the momentary, the ability to keep in mind the impermanent nature of what we know, all these material events which come and go, which is pleasant today but painful tomorrow. That's why there is an ancient verse in, again, Shankaracharya's book. The verse is very profound, so I shall quote. Nirdhanopi sadatushtaka api asahayo mahabalaka nitir trupto abunjanaka api asama samadarsinaka. The Sanskrit verse, what it means is, you may be a very poor person, but you may be still contented, happy. You may not be depressed when you have this contentment. Now, we should never wrongly interpret this as some kind of a passive, a pessimistic, easygoing philosophy, preaching inaction and inactivity. Not at all. In the Gita, you find this recurring theme of activism, efficiency, professionalism, dedication, focus on our duties and responsibilities, how to spend our whole full mental, physical, intellectual energy on the work we are doing. All these ideas are stressed and emphasized in the Gita. But along with that, Gita tells you, you should be very efficient, very professional, very successful. But also you should remember, this success, this professionalism, this efficiency, they are very good, they are necessary. They are necessary, but there is something beyond that. That, you know, the most successful nations are not the happiest. So that we can see. The most successful person also may not be the happiest person. So that's why this contentment. And contentment comes when you remember that when you succeed, even that success is of a fleeting nature. So that higher wisdom, the spiritual common sense, that is what is called contentment in the true sense of the term. It is not artificial creation of satisfaction. Satisfaction is momentary. Something that makes you satisfied now may disappear tomorrow. You become dissatisfied. But the ability to look beyond satisfaction and dissatisfaction at the empirical level, and to go beyond this, it's called contentment. So he says, such a person, spiritually enlightened person, he may be poor economically. Sadatushtaha, he's always contented within. And he may not have many people to help him, you know. Asahayo, still is strong. Strong in wisdom. Strong in the spiritual common sense. Spiritual common sense is not a way of running away from the world of realities. Rather, it is an intelligent, it is an art of facing the realities of the world in a more intelligent manner. Then, nityaprutu abhunjanaka, you may not be eating food, still you can remain in a state of contentment. This is an ancient verse. The central theme is, one should be able to look beyond the ordinary meaning and understanding of contentment. Now, such a person, what happens to him is the next subject. Shankaracharya, who wrote a commentary, he draws a very interesting analogy and a contrast between two types of experiences. That is, he says, sukadukhe puna niyatarupe yato nabhibhijarada ataha tabhyam prathak sidoshnayoho grahanam. That's very interesting. And that is very helpful also. Now, heat and cold, pain and pleasure, These two contrasting pairs of experiences are mentioned, and we are told that we should face them with an equilibrium of mind, with the even-mindedness, with a sense of spiritual common sense. He draws an attention, you know, heat may be a pleasant experience for a person living in cold climate. Cold may be a pleasant experience for somebody who is living in hot climate. So these are subject to changes. They are not, they are flexible. But pain and pleasure are not flexible. Pain never becomes pleasure, and pleasure never becomes pain. So the great philosopher tells you that we should be able to look beyond both. So heat and cold may be interchangeable, but pain and pleasure are never interchangeable. So once we keep in mind that the experiences of this world are naturally, inherently, invariably mixed with both happiness and unhappiness, both painful and also pleasant experiences, then we won't be enslaved, we won't be obsessed, we won't be spiritually enslaved by our attraction for happiness. So we will be able to look beyond them both. This is what gives us a kind of unique spiritual common sense. So in the 15th verse, Lord Krishna says, Yamhina vyadhayante de purusham purushasabha samadukha sukham dhiram so saha amurtatvaya kalpate. Who is a wise man or wise woman, he mentions. The dhira in Sanskrit means somebody who has got dhi, means the spiritual common sense. Spiritual common sense is totally different from brilliance, intellectual brilliance, high IQ, or scholarship, or the ability to understand and analyze things. Not at all. Spiritual common sense is rooted in the idea or in the experience, in the realization of the fact that things of this world, we may need them, we require them to live in the world, but we should remember, even when we make our attempts to acquire all these things, we should remember that they are of a fleeting nature. They are not permanent. The impermanent nature or the momentariness of these worldly empirical experiences should be kept in mind. This gives you a kind of unique, refined intelligence. It's called dhi in Sanskrit. So a person who has got this dhi is called dhira. The literal meaning could mean courageous, but it's only, but in philosophical meaning is a person endowed with the refined intellect, or in other words, a kind of spiritual common sense. Such a person realizes that even in the midst of all these activities in which we are engaged, duties and responsibilities, physically, mentally, intellectually, we are engaged in all these activities, still they all belong to the empirical plane. So they are anitya, I already mentioned the previous verse. They are of a fleeting nature. They are impermanent. They are not eternal. Then what is eternal? The eternal is we have a transphysical. We have a spiritual dimension that goes beyond the mind, intellect and the body. According to Vedanta, there is one divine reality present in all of us. And that divine reality is a spark of what we normally call in monotheistic religion, God. But God in Vedanta is not someone who creates this world and sits above the clouds, a strong man with who keeps scores, who analyzes our actions, supervises our actions, giving punishment and rewards. No. God in Vedanta is the presence of the divine spark that is inherent, that is present in all of us. When we live a pure life, when we think holy thoughts, when we practice unselfishness, love and compassion for our fellow human beings, for the whole creation, then this immanent divine reality unfolds and it manifests in his full splendor. Then we become identified with our deathless immortal identity. That is Amrutattvam. Amrutattvam, the translation, simple translation can be frequently misleading because a simple translation cannot give the whole meaning, the complete meaning. Physically, we cannot remain deathless. Everyone knows. Mentally, intellectually, we cannot. But there is something within us which is deathless, which is permanent. That's a divine reality. So this we can manifest, we can unfold this inherent divine presence by practicing compassion, love, and by living a pure life by practicing unselfishness. So that is the theme of this 15th verse. Yamhina vyathayantedi. A person who is not thrown down by any of these experiences of happiness or misery or cold and heat. Such a person becomes even-minded. Because even by living in this world, living a very happy, successful life, all the time actively engaged in different responsibilities, still he remembers that all these things are of a fleeting nature. It doesn't mean that we should become skeptical or pessimistic, not at all. It is the opposite of pessimism. Rather, it is the antidote, it's a vaccination for depression, really speaking. Because every problem of anxiety and depression is rooted in one central mistake that we always make. We expect perfection from something which is essentially imperfect. We expect permanence from things which are essentially impermanent. That's what happens. Once we do not do that, once we do not expect perfection from things of this world which are essentially, inherently imperfect, then we become even-minded. So it is not pessimism. You know, sometimes that's why Lord Krishna made a statement earlier. If somebody doesn't speak to you in a very happy, smiling manner, oh, it is not good. So everything should be very happy. Hi, how are you? Everything wonderful. Fine. Now this make-believe, superficial, artificial makeup, so to speak, it leaves a dark reality in the mental system. So all the time, every time we are trying to cover up, hide the inner pain and unpleasant experiences. That's why every photo you find, there's a smile. I wonder how a person can smile like that all the time. A person who smiles all the time, he's heading for a problem. You can't be smiling. So every photo you find, you should smile in a very, that kind of artificial smile. It means we want everything to be pleasant, to be happy. There is an inherent hypocrisy and duplicity in that. We know, every educated man in any country knows that things cannot be always happy all the time. There are wonderful situations. There's nothing wrong in expecting happiness. But then forcing ourselves to believe everything is wonderful in this world. So we'll smile and laugh all the time. That actually blocks our real spiritual progress. That actually blocks our ability to become even-minded. That's why expecting elation, happiness all the time is very dangerous. Because actually we are trying to hide a reality that we cannot always have happy experiences. How to remain happy even when we have unhappy experiences? So Lord Krishna makes a very interesting statement elsewhere. There's a famous verse. He says, sukham atindigam yaddat buddhigrahim atindriyam. He says, sukham means happiness. That's the literal meaning of sukham. Dukkham, you know, grief, Buddhist philosophy, Buddhist, unhappiness, fine. But this sukham is not what we normally understand by the word enjoyment. Atyantika means ultimate, fundamental, eternal, everlasting happiness. What is that happiness is defined in this verse. He says, sukham adhiyat, buddhi grahim atyantim, it is beyond the mind, intellect and senses. Which tells you that whatever sensory experiences, whenever sensory experiences bring happiness, that happiness can never be permanent. That's an interesting thing. Whatever happiness is created by sensory, by the senses and mind, can be just one side of the coin, the other side may not be so pleasant. But how to remain happy even when we have to go through the so-called unhappy experiences, so that we can remain happy all the time? Stop looking for happiness. So there is a higher happiness that goes beyond mind and senses. That is sukham atyantikam yad buddhigrahim atyantikam, beyond, transcending the mind, transcending the intellect, transcending the senses, there is a higher happiness. That contentment, once we achieve that, then we attain immortality. That immortality means we have a personality, we have an identity that goes beyond the body, beyond the mind, beyond the intellect. We are essentially a part of that divine reality. Atman in Vedanta we call Atman. Atman is the name of God in this respect. Means Atman means the inherent divine reality present in all of us. Kingdom of God is within you. These are all attempts to explain this Vedantic principle in another language, in another tradition. Kingdom of God is within you, not outside. When kingdom of God comes, you become Amrutattva, eternal. That's eternal. So now this leads to another important theme in the Gita. That the Bhagavad Gita gives a very thorough analysis of what is real, what is unreal. 16th verse. Very famous verse. So in the 15th verse, Lord Krishna tells you the real spiritual person, the spiritually illumined person will have a even-mindedness. And he will not be shaken or shocked by any unhappy experiences. And also he will be elated by any happy experiences. And because he is not always seeking happiness, there is no need or occasion for him to be ever unhappy. Because you will be unhappy only if you are always seeking happiness. If you are not seeking happiness particularly, there is no need for you to be unhappy. You are looking for a coin with only one side, which cannot exist. The other side also should be there. So the 16th verse gives an idea. What is the meaning of reality? What is the eternal reality? This immortal reality in Vedanta. Nasudo vidyade bhavo, na bhavo vidyade sataha, ubhayorabhi drishtvantaha, tu anayoho tattu darshipiki. The meaning is this. The unreal has no being. It cannot have any existence. There is no being. There is no non-existence for what is real. The real will always be real. It can never be unreal. It cannot be non-existent. The literal translation can be a bit abstract. When we interpret, it becomes very simple. One important aspect of Vedanta is, as we proceed, you find suddenly, oh, Vedanta is actually talking about me. The inner me, that day. So that is the greatness of Vedanta. You know, how these great philosophers in Germany, in America, in Australia, all over the world during the last 300 years, when they suddenly discovered Vedanta philosophy. Why they became so infatuated by this great philosophy. When you read this philosophy, you suddenly feel, actually Lord Krishna is talking about me. He is not talking about any particular religion. He is not talking about any particular doctrine. He is talking about natural human spiritual aspirations. And those spiritual aspirations are possible even for somebody who doesn't believe in God. That's what, in fact, Buddha was one example, who was an agnostic, who did not believe in a creator God. He is supposed to be one of the greatest Vedantins of all times. So, before going to the verse, I want to explain the Vedantic interpretation of reality. I mean, the whole range of ontology in Vedanta philosophy is explained here. So, Vedanta looks upon reality from three different perspectives. Three levels of human experience. Three approaches to reality. The first reality, something that always remains the same. All the time. That reality is experienced in dream, in waking state, in deep sleep, in the past, present and future. It transcends time. It is a timeless reality. It doesn't belong to time. It's beyond time. It is called Atman. It is called Paramarthika Satta in the technical language of Sanskrit. It means the absolute reality. It always exists. So there is no time when it doesn't exist. So Vedanta philosophers tell you that it is unborn because it doesn't take birth. Taking birth is a transition from a state of empirical non-existence to a state of empirical existence, which is not conceivable in Vedanta. That Atman is always there. If kingdom of God is something you create, then that kingdom of God is not permanent. It should be always existing before you create, before you discover it. Through our life, through our spiritual practices, we discover something that we so far thought to be non-existing. So, the absolute reality in Vedanta doesn't belong to time, it's beyond time. So it exists the same in the past, present and future. It is birthless, so it is deathless, the same. It cannot be created. It cannot be manufactured. So in Vedanta, when you realize your own true spiritual identity, you are not attaining a new knowledge. You are actually discovering your true nature. Discovering means you don't create or invent it. It was there, you didn't remember that at all. So this is the absolute reality. Then below that, there is another level of reality, which is empirical reality. It's called Vyavaharika Satta. Vyavaharika means for practical utility. We live in this world. We cannot say this world is totally unreal. We live in this world. We can see the San Francisco, the bay, the buildings, the Pacific Ocean. But do you think Pacific Ocean or the bay will be existing like this after, let us say, 10 billion years? Or was existing like this before the Big Bang? It did not exist. The same way in which it is existing right now. So it is called empirical reality, relative reality. That's something that belongs to time. This is the second level of reality. The third level of reality in Vedanta is called Pratibhasika, which means something conceptual reality. Something that exists in your mind, but may not be existing on that spot at that time. So the classical example is this. You have seen a snake in the zoo or maybe in the forests. Next day you see a dark curved rope lying on the floor and you may mistake, if there is not enough light, that this rope is the snake. Because the memory of the snake is shape, color, size, everything is registered in our mental system. And that memory suddenly comes to the surface when you see an object which is similar to that snake which you saw in the zoo. Now, these are three levels of reality. Of course, there is another understanding the opposite of it. That means something which cannot exist even as an idea. The moment you mention it, it negates itself. So, for example, in the ancient Vedantic textbook gives an example of something which cannot even conceived of as real. So the example is Sasavishan and the horns of a hare and things like that. If it is a hare, it cannot have horns. If an animal has horns, it cannot be hare. Maybe some other animal. So these are four levels of reality. Now this present verse tells you what is absolutely unreal can never exist, even as an idea or a concept. And what is absolutely real can never be anything other than the real. Those spiritual sages, spiritual teachers who experienced this truth, they have realized this truth as the reality. The truth about both these have been realized by the sages. This is the 16th verse. Now, the purpose of the 16th verse is this. First of all, it wants to tell us that we live in this world, we experience everything, we are part of this world, we have to do our work, okay, fine. But we should not forget what we know intellectually very well, that is, this world is subject to changes. And in Vedanta, anything that is subject to changes cannot be absolutely real. Anything which changes, you experience, you see it one way today and you see it different way tomorrow. You see it one way, waking state and dream state, you may have dream in different way. That's not unreal, but not absolutely real. So, in the monotheistic devotional philosophies of world religions, God is the absolute reality. In Vedanta philosophy, it is true, but then the God is in this idea of God is interpreted in a transcendental language. That God is a reality present in all of us as an inherent, immanent reality, divine spark. When we practice even-mindedness, compassion, and purity of life, purity of thought, purity of words, when we look upon the whole creation as one spiritual family, then this fact becomes more and more obvious and clear to us. That's what happened to Buddha, Christ, or Sri Ramakrishna, the great teachers. This is the Vedantic perspective. So that takes us to an experience, not conviction or belief, an experience of this all-pervading nature of divine reality present everywhere. And that is the Sat, or the absolutely real, which is immortal. Once we realize this presence of this reality within us, then we realize our eternal immortal dimension. If we look upon, this physical body or the mind, we can never be really happy. If Stephen Hawking's, according to him, human life is only physical body, there was no time when he would be free from grief and happiness and sorrow. Mind also sometimes gets disturbed. So we should have a dimension beyond mind. Mind is happy now, unhappy next moment. Intellect also like that. But there is something within us that goes beyond the body, beyond the mind, beyond intellect. That is this immanent, inherent reality. That's the Vedantic understanding of the real, the absolute reality, and that is Atman. So we'll continue discussion in the coming session next week. Now we can have interaction. You are most welcome to ask questions according to any gender questions.
Swamiji, is contentment in time or outside of time?
Contentment.
Yes.
When we get this contentment, it's because we are able to look beyond pain and pleasure equation, really speaking. That contentment slowly develops in us when we start spiritual practice. The ability to look beyond pain and pleasure equation. The ability to remain in a state of balance when there is a very happy experience and also when there is an unhappy experience. Without being insensitive or without being inactive. That's a very important point to remember. It is not an inactivity or lack of activism or insensitivity that is implied. You do all this. You have to do it to the best of your ability with all focus and attention. But still, we should not be obsessed. That absence of being obsessed, enslaved by the sensory experiences. You should be able to look upon your own actions, your own experiences as a witness. You should be able to witness your own mind. In fact, Buddhist kinds of practice of the Yogacara system and the Vijnanavada and this Vipassana meditation or my witness meditation, these are all different aspects of Vedanta philosophy which actually migrated to Buddhist philosophy in the 6th century of BC at that time. So, once we develop a kind of even-mindedness, you'll be able to watch your own mind because you are not obsessed. You are not just enslaved. See, when you are watching a drama sitting in the gallery, you're going to be playing in the stage. Both cannot go together. When you're playing in the stage, you cannot watch it. When you witness and watch it, you can be playing the stage. So when you non-identify with your own mind, with your own worries, with your own anxieties, you are able to look upon them with even-mindedness. So surprisingly, Gita is not talking about God or prayer here. Slowly, it is building up a very sound psychological philosophy. I mean, based on the empirical experience that we all go through.
Yeah. So what is divine discontentment?
Divine discontentment is different. That's I mentioned in the yoga lectures. If you look at the yoga sutras, 15th sutra of Sadhanapada, you find Parinama Tapa Samskara Dukkhehi, except there's a guna visheshacha dukkhameva sarvam vivekinaha. There is a famous sutra in the Yogacara. Parinama tapa samskara dukkhehi guna visheshacha dukkhameva sarvam vivekinaha. Parinama tapa samskara means what? There is a parinama dukkha. Buddha's grief is given as an example. Now Buddha was born as a prince. Nothing to complain about. He had a wonderful life. Everything that we could have aspired for. And then one day he was being taken out on the city, on the capital city, Lumbini, where he was born. And he had three visions. The face of a sick man, an old man. So dark realities of life, sickness and old age. And then a dead body was being taken from the cremation ground. So the reality of death. Physical, this body. He was very healthy. He was 28 years old. Very healthy person. One day, I will be sick like this. I will die like this. I will become old like this. Three terrible truths suddenly dawn upon him. Now, he had no private problems, mind you. He was a healthy man, young man. He was a prince, luxurious life, everything. But he wanted to know what's the meaning. His mind became disturbed. What should be the meaning behind this changing, unpleasant visions of life? And he left his home, his palace, walked 1200 miles, came to Bodh Gaya, is in Bihar state, all the way from Nepal to Bodh Gaya, and sat under a tree and he became Buddha. He took a vow, I won't get up from the seat without getting the real contentment. That means, you know, the transcendental vision, spiritual common sense that we described, the even-mindedness. Ikhasane sushyudu me shariram dugasti mamsam chavilayam chayadhu aprapisiddhim bhujan madurlabham naivasanat kaya matashalishyade. Buddha's vow is portrayed in graphic language by the biographer in a 2nd century AD work called Lalitavistara. He says, I am sitting under this tree, on this seat. I won't get up from this seat before I get a real experience, true meaning of life and death, which is not easy to get, which is very difficult to experience. And Buddha meditated and he had to go through, and you know, he had to go through all his previous life cycles, Jataka tales, 543 pictures, visions flashed through his mind as he was meditating for years. He realized that all these things coming and going, and he became Buddha. So that is the highest example of contentment. So all cannot expect to have it immediately. You have to be a Buddha. So this is not an easy thing to achieve. And you may take, you can do, maybe it may take a few hundreds of lives, that's all. Life cycle, so it's not there. So the point is, but remember, but then this idea of looking upon pain and pleasure, the pleasant and the unpleasant, with a degree of even-mindedness, it helps you to conserve your energy, physical energy, intellectual energy. After all, it is based on the common sense reality. Everything is coming and going. Agama, apayinaka. Lord Krishna says, these things are of a fleeting nature. They come and they go. That everyone knows that. If you ask a kindergarten child, he will know that. Everybody knows. You need not be a scholar, you need not be a philosopher to know this. But the point is, frequently we forget this. Lord Krishna tells you, remember this, that's all. Yeah. This could happen, suppose you are returning from a crematorium. You have witnessed the death of a close friend or relative. And you are crying, you are slightly depressed, your office, somebody, it happens to everyone. You are born, you have to die. That's what your friend may try to console you. It is actually coming from Gita. He may not be aware of it. That is called spiritual common sense. Okay, please.
Swamiji, I was thinking about contentment when one is going through suffering, a hardship. Is it a type of stoicism? Is that a proper term to use, like a resilience, an ability to endure hardship, an ability to stay even-minded when one is suffering? Is that similar to stoicism? Is that similar in a way?
Yeah, it could be. That was because the ancient Indian philosophical ideas traveled different parts of Asian continent, right from the 9th century BC onwards. You know. But this Vedanta tells you it is not stoic, sturdy mind, continuing the struggle, persevere. It's true. That's what happens when you become even-minded. But beyond that, you see you are connecting with a great universal truth when you read the Gita. It is based on something that we all know, but we don't take notice of. What is that? Everything comes and goes. So that's something which we all know. So without being insensitive or being indifferent to all this, whenever we become too worried or too anxious about this, then we should remember things come and go. They are of a fleeting nature. The word anitya I used here means that which is non-eternal. See, even when we face a problem in life, the moment we remember, that problem will not be there after some time. We know that intellectually. For mind often doesn't reflect that wisdom at that time. What we know intellectually, mind may not be always able to remember that. So everything comes and goes. The impermanent nature of everything in this empirical world and in sensory world, world of sensory experiences, that is emphasized here. Once we remember that, there is no need, there will be no scope to become discontented or dissatisfied or depressed. And that takes you to a state of even-mindedness. It is not a state of elation. It is a state of balance, equilibrium of mind. That's the idea.
You mentioned compassion for others as leading to a state of equilibrium, or I was wondering what that has to do with anything, really. Why is that important?
Compassion for?
Compassion for others and purity of thought. Why is that important to?
Yeah. Vedanta tells you that this spiritual reality is present in everyone, in everything. So compassion is not really an act of charity. It is rooted in the idea of the spiritual unity and oneness of humanity. So when we show compassion to somebody, we are spiritually helping ourselves. When we do not do that, we are doing harm to somebody, we are spiritually doing harm to ourselves. So the idea of the spiritual oneness, the humanity is one spiritual family. That is the practical aspect of Vedanta metaphysics. The metaphysics tells you the same reality is present in everyone. Its practical application makes you a better human being. And that compassion or humanistic impulse is not an act of charity. Is rooted in the understanding and realization of the fact that when we do good to others, we are doing good to ourselves. And opposite way. When we do harm to others, we are doing harm to ourselves. The spiritual unity and oneness of existence is the foundation of this compassion. When Buddha came, this idea was completely forgotten. So Buddha came in 5th, 6th century BC. So he emphasized the humanistic aspect of Vedanta. So Buddhism is nothing but a humanistic interpretation of Vedanta philosophy, giving emphasis to the humanistic and ethical dimension of Vedanta. Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Harihi Om Tat Sat Sri Ramakrishna Arpanamastu Om Peace Peace Peace.